Ari Rafferty, Baker Street, broadcasting live from more than 600 affiliates in North America, including Puerto Rico, Guam, Canada. You are listening to Coast AM and out of the iHeart Studios in Louisville, Kentucky. Right now, from 840 WHAS, I'm Connie Willis. Hello, everybody. Guess what? George Norrie has another book out. Man, that guy's got it going on. He's got all sorts of things happening. I tell you, he just keeps going. He is the Energizer Bunny. And this is really interesting because this is a nonfiction book. Now, I just got it, so I skimmed through it a little bit. I didn't get to read everything, but you're going to be, you know, I'm going to tell you more about it as I get into it on the next time that I'm here. It's called Mad as Hell, and it's a nonfiction book, okay? So he's just really telling it like it is, okay? He's talking about the world we live in now. And if you go to our website, it talks a little bit about the book. So make sure you go there and you can read up on it. And I find it interesting, and one of the things that's written up here, so I want to say it because it comes from George. It's, let's see here. We'll do here. Quote, "Join me by reading why I am mad," unquote. George, this is what George is writing. And back to a quote, "and maybe you will get as angry as I am about conditions in the country we love," end of quote there. And he's called a voice in the darkness, which is so true. I mean, voice in the darkness, absolutely, that's who he is. It's just so iconic, you know, to stop and think about this. And it's just so nice to be a part of it. But a voice in the darkness with a radio show heard by millions, absolutely. And this is what he says again. "I consider myself not an entertainer or someone to dictate how we should live, but a facilitator who can help guide the path chosen." And if you really want to know what he thinks, then this is it. It's really true. It's what I skimmed through and what I stopped and read. I mean, make no bones about it. This is how he feels, and this is, he's telling it. So if you want to know, well, what's George think? You know, don't ask me. I know you do. That's cool. But if you want to know how he really feels about things, this is what you want to do. Get his book. Mad as Hell, America's number one all-night radio host. And that's who he is. He takes on the dangerous world we live in. It's now available on Amazon. For more information, go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Dr. Jeffrey Long, oncologist and researcher, probably the biggest of all with near-death experiences. Would you say that, Jeff, that you are probably the biggest researcher of all?
I certainly have the largest number of near-death experiences to investigate. I wouldn't call myself the, I think I'd leave it at that. I think all of us investigators bring in a different perspective from our different academic background or perspective that we use. So I certainly consider myself to be a significant contributor to the knowledge about near-death experience.
And that you are. I definitely want to talk about the evidence of NDEs. But before that, can you just tell everybody how you got involved in near-death experiences?
Well, that's a great question. You know, people always say, gosh, here you are, a physician, very active practice, and how on earth did you get involved in near-death experience research? Well, the answer is over 25 years ago, I was going through one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, the Journal of the American Medical Association, looking for a cancer-related article. I was in my residency training after medical school. Completely by accident, I found the term near-death experience in an article. And I stopped. I'd never heard of it before. I didn't understand it. But when I read the article, I was immediately amazed. Here were people around the world having these near-death experiences with a content remarkably similar. And everything I knew, Connie, as a physician, told me that's impossible. You cannot have a lucid, organized experience when you're unconscious or clinically dead. And so I broke off from looking for that article, read some more about it from some references at the end of the article, and kind of was hooked immediately. I said, if this is true, this changes my opinion of the universe we live in some very important way, if near-death experiences are for real. Now, I didn't embrace it wholeheartedly. As a man of science, I'm always asking, where's the evidence? How do we know this? What underlies that sense that near-death experiences are real? So several years later, I set up the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation website at nderf.org immediately had a survey up to ask people to share these experiences, answer questions about it. And finally, after all those years ago and 4,000 near-death experiences later, I am quite confident in saying that near-death experiences are, in a word, real.
Yeah, it's got to be hard with you to, you know, that science, that scientist in you that says, and I got to have the evidence, I got to have the evidence. But sometimes evidence is calculated in another way that we don't have instruments for, right? That, at least not yet.
Oh, well, I think that's true. I guess, Connie, when I looked at near-death experiences, as with other things that I like to investigate in a scholarly fashion, I've always guided by that core scientific principle, and that is what is real is consistently observed. And so I looked for that in near-death experiences very carefully, both consistencies and inconsistencies. And at the end of that amazing journey of having reviewed 1,000 of them, the consistency vastly outweighed the inconsistency, and that's one of the real underpinnings of why I represent the world today, that near-death experiences are indeed a part of reality, and it's something that we can learn a great deal from.
Well, what are, give us some examples of the evidence of near-death experiences.
Sure. We keep talking about near-death experiences being impossible when you're unconscious or clinically dead. Connie, when your heart stops beating, which is a very common preceding event for a near-death experience, so your heart stops beating immediately, of course, blood stops flowing to the brain. 10 to 20 seconds after blood stops flowing to the brain, the EEG, electroencephalogram, which is a measurement of brain electrical activity, goes absolutely flat. It is not even theoretically possible to have a conscious experience at that time, and yet, by the hundreds, people that have cardiac arrest and then have a near-death experience with it are highly lucid at that point in time, have highly organized experiences. Connie, that's absolutely medically inexplicable. So that's one of the major lines of evidence for the reality of near-death experience, and there's certainly some other strong ones too.
Well, that goes into, you can go a whole lot deeper, obviously, in that one too, because, you know, you think it's the brain that tells you what you see, what you experience, but you're not using the brain at that point. So the soul itself is the brain.
Oh.
It's not just the life, it's the brain, right?
Absolutely.
So what is the brain for then, you know?
The brain, the soul seems to coexist with the physical brain during our physical life, and then when it's liberated, becomes free during a near-death experience or even permanent irreversible death, it's a game changer. And just to take that concept and run, when you're under general anesthesia, I mean, under that blanket of sleep, it should, of course, be impossible to have any lucid, organized awareness. And yet, during general anesthesia, some people have, of course, well-documented cardiac arrest. They're being carefully monitored. Now, I would put to you that if you have your heart stop and you're under general anesthesia, it should be, if you will, doubly impossible to have any experience because you've got two different reasons that your body's shut down. And yet, near-death experiences do happen under general anesthesia. I studied that. I reported that by literally scores of people describing near-death experiences under such time. The near-death experiences, the content are absolutely the same. And in fact, I ask a key survey question about their degree of consciousness and alertness during the experience. And amazingly, even with their physical brain completely shut down under general anesthesia, the survey question about their degree of consciousness and alertness during their near-death experience, absolutely no difference whether they were under general anesthesia when they coded or at any other time. So that's some of the strongest evidence possible that near-death experiences absolutely cannot be related to physical brain function at all.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think there's been, and probably you have some of this too, maybe that's where I saw some of this stuff, like people that were blind maybe could see.
Oh, that's one of my favorite lines of evidence for the reality of near-death experience. Connie, I, some years ago, interviewed Vicky. Vicky's a very special lady. She was born totally blind. To her, vision was unknown and unknowable, and believe me, you cannot explain vision in terms of the remaining four physical senses. I tried. It's impossible. Vision is vision. And yet, Vicky, when she was in her early 20s, was in a car, a bad auto accident. No, she wasn't driving. She was a singer, very well-known singer, and was leaving a one of her singing debuts, and unfortunately, inebriated patron was trying to drive her home. Bad car wreck. And so for the first time that Vicky saw herself, she was in the emergency room and had a near-death experience. For the first time in her life,
oh my.
Had vision with her consciousness above her body, and in fact, she didn't even know that was her, because don't forget, vision was
wow.
unknown to her. So she was actually initially very frightened about this new experience of vision, saw this body down there, and it was only after she was able to correlate what she was seeing with vision for the first time with what previously she knew by feel, her long hair, and interestingly, a ring with a very distinctive pattern on it that her father had given her. Only after she put two and two together did she say, wow, this is vision, and that's me down there.
Oh, my.
Vicky went on to have a very detailed near-death experience and many of the elements that typically occur during it. But one of the interesting ones is she had what so many other near-death experiencers describe, and that's what we call 360-degree vision. In other words, she could simultaneously process visual information in front of her, behind of her, right, left, up, down. Technically, the term should be spherical vision. And so that, for Vicky, was all she knew of vision in her life. And it was an amazing conversation I had with her as I tried to tell her all we have is, if you will, pie-shaped visual fields for our folks in our earthly life. We can't see like that. And I think Vicky had a hard time believing because, again, from her total life experience, she had that spherical vision that's commonly reported in NDEs. But yes, when you're born totally blind and have an extremely detailed visual experience like that, absolutely beyond any medical explanation that we know of.
That's incredible. And the fact, too, that when people say, when they come back and they say colors are so vivid, and even there's colors that they didn't even know existed. I mean, so to go from nothing to that, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, and isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You know, you want to take skeptics and kind of say, listen to what they're saying.
This isn't based on
earthly life. They
That's right.
They describe feelings, colors. They describe whole realms of existence that are beyond anything that they could have possibly imagined. I mean, near-death experiences and what they describe are not only beautiful and majestic, but absolutely so often beyond anything that they even conceived could possibly happen to them. And yet there they are during a near-death experience, actually experiencing it.
That's neat. I'd love to talk to her and ask her, hey, so did you like yourself? Did you think you were okay? You think you look all right? You know, did you like your hair color? I'd go into something like that. That's interesting. And just quickly, before you give us some, I know you have some situations you want to talk about. Before you do that, is there, and I think there is, but I'm not sure, is there when you do pass, is there a little bit like an ounce of weight that goes away? Do we kind of think we might have a weight on soul leaving the body?
Yeah, that's a good question. Around the early 1900s, there was a belief that when a person died, that their soul would leave the body, and that you could weigh it, and you could detect some tiny fraction of an ounce that was attributed to the weight of the soul. Well, unfortunately, there's been a lot of more recent scientific and scholarly investigation, and it seems that what they were observing in the early 1900s was probably just water weight evaporating from the deceased body. But at this point in time, we don't believe that when someone dies that their weight changes, and I know that was believed many years to decades ago, but with modern scientific investigation, that doesn't seem to be the case. There's actually an interesting Wikipedia article that reviews all the evidence on that. So as best I can tell, from my research, Connie, the soul is weightless. It's immaterial. It's packed with that powerful ability to observe, feel, and interact with unearthly realms of existence, and yet in earthly terms, its weight seems to be zero.
Well, it's amazing that you have just brought that to my attention, that I never even thought about it. It wasn't that I don't believe it, but I never even thought about the fact that your soul is your mind as well. It's the brain. It's the thought. It's not just the soul and the life and the magic. It's You know, it's like what's that brain doing anyway? You know, when we're here, what's it even? It's not what I thought now. It's just now hitting me. That's amazing.
Yeah,
So,
and it is. And you bring up a real good point
you
here. The
know.
soul, it seems to be all that we are, everything that we
Yeah.
ever have been, memories, to a large extent, who we are. It's really us just free from our physical body, which is a real beautiful concept when you think about it.
It is this body, man. It's in our way. We got to get rid of this. Because you know, when we have so much people have brain damage along the way, it doesn't matter that the brain is damaged because the soul is where it's at from what you're talking about. And
Oh, absolutely. And that should be real heartening to those that have known people with brain damage. The soul remains undamaged and as best I can tell, is eternal, always having existed and always will exist, absolutely free. And in fact, interestingly, I have a small series of near-death experiences where they encountered deceased loved ones that had lost a limb during their life, an arm or a leg. Every single near-death experience where they're encountered in an unearthly, if you will, heavenly realm, the person always has all their limbs back, all their arms, all their legs, and whatever chronic illness they may have had when they died, they seem to be picture-perfect health when they encountered in the near-death experience.
so they do have a body in their near-death experience. There, when they're there, they have a body.
It's not physical the way we know it. It seems to be, as best I can tell, in near-death experiences, it seems to be sort of like a representation. It seems to be in a near-death experience, it's a realm of infinite possible manifestations. And so we've even had people that have encountered an unformed being in a near-death experience ask directly, "How would you like for me to appear to you?" And even give a list of possibilities. It seems to be in a near-death experience, there certainly are encountering their deceased loved ones, very real in their souls, but how they manifest, how they appear, picture perfect health. And in fact, interestingly, if someone died at a very advanced age and they encountered their deceased loved one during a near-death experience, they may appear decades younger. Or an infant that died within the first several years of life, interestingly, encountered by those having a near-death experience during the experience, that infant may be some years older. And so there's seems to be that almost infinite realm of possibilities in near-death experience.
Oh my goodness, just so enlightening and so amazing. You know, this is where people have the most fear, I would say, is is there anything after this? And so the insight that you have and all the research that you've done, I hope it really does affect people that have that fear or that question in their life. You know, you bring so much hope for them. And I'm already there. I'm there. I believe it without a doubt. But there's a lot of people on the fence. And so I hope that your book and your information will help people. Just real quickly, if you can give your websites and everything where people can get a hold of you real quick, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back with you. Can you do that one more
Yeah,
time?
sure. The Near Death Experience Research Foundation, NDERF.org, world's largest near-death experience website.
All right, Jeffrey Long, Dr. Jeffrey Long, that's who we're talking with tonight. Evidence of the afterlife and also evidence of God. We'll be talking about that soon, too. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Coast AM. Hello, and welcome back to Coast AM. That tune right there changed my life. Little River Band, cool change. Going from one radio station to another radio station, years back to a music radio. And I left from one city. Actually, I left from this city, Louisville, and I was going to San Antonio, which was going to take me to San Diego. But for some reason, I had to have this song as my goodbye song. When you're in radio and you leave a station, you always play your goodbye song. It's just the way it is. That's what we do as a jock, right? And this was my song, though it didn't match anything, but I knew in my heart this was my song. I mean, I was going to San Antonio, right? Why would cool change work? However, I wasn't there long. I didn't like where I was. I made another move instantly, was offered something else, and it was in Sarasota, Florida, which totally fits this tune. So always trust your heart, folks. Always trust your heart. And you know what? As people that are, you know, into coast, that's the kind of people we are. And if that doesn't bring a tear to your eye like it is me, well, then we need to get your heart flowing, and we need to get you to meet someone. We need to get you to meet someone of like mind. And you know how you can do that? It's Paranormal Date. This is really cool. George Norrie put this together with a friend. And, you know, it's basically those of you out there single looking for somebody of like mind that you can talk about these cool things that we talk about on Coast together without them going, you're a nut. No, this is Paranormal Date. You're not alone. I love how he has set this up. Guess what? He's got nearly 65,000 members. Not yet, but just right there on the verge of 65,000 members. So a really good chance that you might be able to meet somebody of like mind. It's completely free to join and search things out. And if you decide to go for it, well, you can get a really nice discount by using the code George. All right. If you want more information, please check it out. It's paranormaldate.com. And also, those conspiracy folks out there, you know, you're in a class all alone by yourselves. Well, there's also conspiracydate.com, too. More information, check out our website, coasttocoastam.com. It's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. However, I'm in tonight. Hello, everybody. I'm Connie Willis. Very happy to be here and discussing with Dr. Jeff Long, near-death experiences, and he's got a lot of information on that. There's a lot of evidence behind it, but recently he's got a new book out, God in the Afterlife, and he's got evidence of God. So, Jeffrey, I can't wait to hear more.
Plenty to talk about, Connie. Your listeners want to stay tuned for this fascinating discussion coming up.
Absolutely. So what is the special knowledge? You know, what is this evidence of God that you have?
Well, interestingly, from the very beginning of me reading near-death experiences and encountering people that had near-death experiences, over and over people would talk about how they encountered God or a supreme being or the language would be different. But over and over, it seemed to be fairly common in near-death experiences that they were encountering something. And this, again, was in an unearthly realm, if you will, a heavenly realm. So in a stroke of brilliance in the most recent survey version that we had on our website, our research website, I asked a very critical question. I had no idea it was going to literally change my life as much as it did. The question, Connie, was, and we asked all people that had a near-death experience the following: during your experience, did you encounter any specific information or awareness that God or a supreme being exists? And the survey responses, to my astonishment, 45.5% said, yes, Dr. Long, they did encounter some information or awareness that a God or a supreme being exists. I was flabbergasted. I had no idea that we'd have that high of a percentage of yeses. In fact, to put that in perspective, we talk often about encountering a tunnel in near-death experience. That's only about 15 to 20%. You know, having a life review, you know, it's maybe, you know, again around that 15 to 20%, and even encountering deceased loved ones, which is people commonly associate with near-death experiences, far less than that 45.5% of people that during their experience believe that they encountered some information or awareness. So the good news is that in addition to that question, that was immediately followed with a narrative response for people that either answered that question as yes or uncertain. They went on to describe what it is they encountered, and that's what led to my next book, God in the Afterlife. Amazing descriptions of God that these near-death experiencers provided, not only in response to that question, but at other parts of what they shared in their near-death experience. And so it was that began my journey, Connie.
And what were the, what are they, is it a sense of superiority in front of them? What is their sense of God?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, how do you even go about conceptually investigating some phenomenon like this? And I actually wrestled with that for a while. And so what I decided to do was to look over near-death experiences shared over about a two-year period. And so that would result in no bias. In other words, you don't want to pick and choose, you know, near-death experiences from 10 years ago that you quote like, unquote, and sort of exclude experiences that don't seem to fit the pattern. So I did the appropriate rigorous research methodology of looking over sequentially shared near-death experiences. So over about a two-year period, I found 277 near-death experiences shared again with our NDERF.org research website, all these that completed the survey. And 277 of these people described either an awareness or an encounter with, and the word they used in what they shared was God or G-D. We accepted was a common way that some people feel comfortable describing an awareness of God. So,
is what
G-D? Yeah, some people are uncomfortable saying or speaking or communicating the word God, and so that's how they feel more comfortable sharing it. It's certain religious. There's certain religions that are for the adherents are more comfortable relaying God, but that's still God.
Okay.
So interestingly, we went ahead and looked at all those times that people used the word God, culled out what they were talking about at that time, put that in a huge old database, and started to crunch the data. You know, what was the most common elements? What exactly were the most frequent things that people were describing when they were aware of or encountered God? And so right off the bat, as I started looking at this information, it was amazing. The first thing and the most common thing, and this shouldn't be a huge surprise, the number one concept that people described when they encountered God in a near-death experience was God's love.
Love, so, yay.
One, yeah, yay, thank goodness.
The only thing that's real.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean,
yes.
And maybe even more right than you know, but when they have a near-death experience and encountered the love of God, they described it as profound, overwhelming, and totally accepting, very often as far beyond the love that they could have ever encountered in their earthly life. I mean, listen to this. In their own words, it was like looking into the eyes of a baby that you had newborn into your family, your first baby. It was like looking into their eyes for the first time, times a million.
Mm.
Just mind-boggling. And remarkably, too, when people describe that love of God in near-death experiences, they feel that they're accepted, that God seems to accept everyone for who they are, all that they are, everything that they are, and that's just transformative to a lot of people and very remarkable. Over and over we hear how they've never encountered that in their earthly life, and yet here they are before this profoundly loving being, love times a billion. And that really seems to be make a great impact on people and how they understand God. And certainly the number one thing, one of the most common things, actually the number one thing that they share. But it's just very beautiful to come away with the concept that God loves us regardless of who we are, what we look like. God loves us regardless of how young or old we are, what our shortcomings may be. All of us, God loves for exactly who and what we are.
So everything we've been taught like that, these people are telling you when they come back.
Yeah, this is their very consistent message. Mm-hmm. In fact, I can't think of any of the 277 near-death experiences that had any significantly dissenting information to this profound love of God for who we are and what we are. And of course, as you can imagine, if you encounter love like that during a near-death experience, all of a sudden, I think a lot of these people seemingly literally take a little piece of that heaven back home with them when they live the rest of their earthly life. It affects the people. They seem to live more lovingly, sort of in a way, in a reflection of that ultimate, if you will, perfect love that they encounter during their near-death experience.
Perfect love. I love that phrase, perfect love. That's awesome. Were some of these people non-believers beforehand and, you know, maybe even like grumpy people? Sorry to say.
I like that. The people that have near-death experiences come from all walks of life, young, old, scientists, physicians, homemakers, children, people from all religious beliefs and even lack of religious belief totally. We actually had a series in my study of these 277 people that encountered God that were atheists. We asked as a survey question what their religious beliefs were at the time they had their near-death experience. And we had, about 8, 10, 12 of these folks that described themselves as atheists at the time they had their near-death experience. Now, as you can imagine, during their near-death experience, they would have no expectation or belief that, that God or anything remotely like God could happen because, well, they didn't believe in it. And yet, remarkably, here we have these people with the atheist background that encounter God. Now, of course, as you can imagine, all of them stopped being atheists when they encountered God right. in their near-death experience. And actually, that shows a lot of courage for these people to come back and change and share that with their friends, family, and loved ones, because for a lot of these folks, that was sort of their self-identification, was their atheistic beliefs. And for them to come back and have a major, oops, I kind of didn't get that right, and here's my experience, and be willing to share that with those around them, that really takes a lot of courage, Connie, and I have a lot of respect for people that did that. But absolutely, God is encountered not only by atheists, but from people from every part of the religious spectrum, you name it, and even from those from non-Western near-death experiences. Non-Western countries around the world, they too can encounter God. So it doesn't, and of course, children. Let's not forget very young children. And I had a specific study of children under the age of 5. Their average age was actually 3.5 years old. And of course, Connie, when you're that young, you don't understand religion. It's you don't get it. You know, of course, you've almost certainly never heard of near-death experiences, and you wouldn't have any particularly formed beliefs about God. And yet people that have that experience at that tender young age still may encounter God and still may be dramatically affected. And again, remarkably, what they describe about God across all those religious backgrounds, age, you name it, striking similarity in their descriptions of God.
You know, just going back a little bit, when you said that these people, it takes courage to, as an atheist, come back and say, oh my gosh, I met God. It takes courage as a human, but they have been beyond the human experience, you know, and they came back. And that really would show their friends and family, too, how very much of a experience they had for them to do that. You know, the courage part is a very human thing, but they went beyond that, you know?
They did. And actually beyond that, Connie, as you can imagine, they had to know with every fiber of their being that what they experienced was real before they were
no
going to turn around and change
yeah.
their beliefs based
yeah.
on that one life experience. So this part of the... In fact, I asked near-death experiencers as a group what they thought about the reality of their experience. 95.5% believed that their experience was definitely real.
Ugh.
So for near-death experiences as a whole, even those that were atheists that encountered God, they come back absolutely confident, unshakably aware that their experience was real, even more real than earthly reality, as they often say, and make substantial life changes in response to what they knew from their near-death experience.
This is kind of a funny story. One time I had a surgery and they had to put me out. And I remember, you know, I'm always joking all the time, but I was serious too. I told the anesthesiologist, I said, you know, take me to the light. And she didn't like that. I actually don't think that she didn't like it because she was like, oh, you know, that's terrible. I don't want to do that to you. I don't think she understood it or even thought that that was true, that there was a light. You know, I thought that would get, you know, a laugh. And I would love it if you could just get to the light just to see it, you know, and come back and go, I saw it. But she didn't laugh at all. And the funny, well, the terrible thing to me was she is a person in that position, you are right at the brink of taking someone out, you know, and for her not to even realize afterlife or anything like that was strange for me. I would think that I would be thinking about that all the time as an anesthesiologist. I mean, I wouldn't want you to cross, but I mean, I would have the education of knowing all of that. I was very surprised that that wasn't even in her mind.
That is sad. I think it's been very helpful to me as a physician to understand profoundly about the reality of an afterlife. And gosh, I joke around with my patients.
Yes.
I guess she was too busy passing gas to have a
what?
Humor. Oh, that's maybe that's it. But you know, and Connie, just take what you're saying about light. That's also one of the most common things people say too when they encounter God or when they have a near-death experience in general. And when you see light in near-death experiences, and it seems to be especially pronounced in the presence of God, they often describe it as an unearthly light. We had one near-death experiencer say it was like a million times a million suns in its brilliance, and yet never did near-death experiencers say that it hurts their, quote, eyes, unquote, basically how they perceive things during a near-death experience. So again, very, very common. So attention all physicians and anesthesiologists. Have a sense of humor, especially
That's
when
right.
Connie and I are around.
That's right. And, you know, I find it interesting, too, that when these people cross and they come back and they say things like you just said, like, wow, the light was so bright, but it didn't burn my eyes. And I felt at peace. I felt no pain. There was no time. They still have the human experience still going on, where they're used to time, they're used to pain, they're used to these things, and it's still in their mind even after they've crossed. You know, as big as a difference that occurs, you think all that just might go away. It's not like they cross a line and boop, everything behind them's gone. They still have a memory of life and pain.
Oh, yeah.
And time.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, there's often a transition. During a near-death experience may, you know, see their earthly body and sort of be, you know, time-oriented, but you really nailed it there. As time goes on, during a near-death experience, they very typically say that time doesn't exist, that in these unearthly or heavenly realms, time as we know it on Earth is simply not existing there, which is, you know, again, shows that the strikingly unearthly things that people go through. I mean, here on Earth, we're always under the clock, deadlines.
Yeah.
You have to meet things. I mean, it's almost an awe moment for me to think, wow, you know, you could be in a place where we don't have that deadline, that time, the commitments that have to get done by a certain time. We're literally, a part of being free is we don't have that constraint of time that so guides our earthly life.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I think maybe some people call it the prison planet. Now I'm understanding more and more why this is. It's the body itself. Well, when these people, so what are some of the descriptions of God when people see God? Are they seeing the man with the white beard and the white hair? Are they seeing angels? Are they seeing a big blob or just a feeling?
Sure. We talked about light. The most common single word used when people encounter God is light. God can choose to manifest in some somewhat different appearances. You know, may even not even be seen. May be seen as sort of an amorphous being, or even as a sort of a humanoid being. But you know, always and it's interesting. While God may appear variably, the thing that impresses near-death experiencers the most is that overwhelming sense of the love, acceptance, and peace that they typically feel in the presence of God. But, you know, let's talk about, and that's a real good question, Connie, let's look directly at what a near-death experiencer says that encounters God. We've sort of talked about this abstractly, but heck, here's Anne. Anne had a near-death experience, and talk about a close brush with death. We've got just a moment here. I'll share what she encountered.
Sure.
Anne, in sharing her experience with me, had no brain function, was not expected to live, and she was actually disconnected from a respirator. And that means, you know, terminal event.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suddenly, and again, in Anne's words, I was suddenly in a dim-lit room by myself. I noticed in particular that this room had a door, which I felt was special in some way. Then I became aware I was no longer alone. God
was Jeff.
There.
Jeff, let's just stop on that note just so I don't have to cut you off. I'm sorry. Save that story with the Anne. Everybody, stick around. We're going to hear about Anne. This is going to be a good one. I know it is. I'm telling you, amazing and fascinating things here. It's Dr. Jeffrey Long talking about near-death experiences and evidence of God. Stay with us. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.